Howdy!
I'm Halcyon. I'm here with Eartha Harris. This is a rare and exciting version of Conversation Nation, which is an offshoot of Hug Nation, which is a chance to recalibrate and find your highest self. Now, Conversation Nation is different than Hug Nation, where I simply rattle on, and we're doing a little bit of a stalling as people find that we're broadcasting live and find their way to the room. Welcome everyone who is joining us live. And if you're on the archive, welcome to the archive. Welcome from the past. So Conversation Nation is an opportunity for me to connect with or find people that are willing to talk to me. That's first prerequisite. But really, it's people that I know that are amazing and inspire me, and then trying to get some time to share and talk publicly. And Eartha, you are one of those people.
Thank you. I feel honored.
So last night, I got to see you perform live for the first time. Eartha is a, there's two things that I want to talk about today, and we're going to take our time. One is your performer musical life, and also just, and you as a liver of life. Because that, I think, is, they go hand in hand, but it's the thing that I want to spend this time to share is people who are living interesting, exciting lives and have come up with philosophies or theories or repeat obstacles that they can share. And I've been enjoying listening to your perspectives, and we're going to talk about that now. So, okay. Last night, I see you on stage with a keytar, which puts you in a category that is just like, there's presidents, there's movie stars, and there's people who play guitar.
This is true.
So can you tell me about your main musical project, and how would you describe it?
Sure. So my musical project's called Living Light, and I've been doing this solo project for about, since like late 2012, early 2013. And it's all self-produced. It's electronic dance music, but it has a sort of like a global world beat, Middle Eastern kind of flair to it. Definitely has some like dub reggae inspired roots to it. Some of this was greatly influenced by a band that I was in prior called Psylab. And before that I had another solo project called Project Sphere. But I've been doing Living Light now for, I guess it's been about 3-4 years now, and have been touring with it. And one of the reasons I play guitar on stage is just because I love having a little bit of audience interaction, and I'm also a dancer, and so like all of the music that I produce, like I'm dancing to it in my studio, and if I can't dance to it, then it doesn't like go on an album. So it's just so much more fun and engaging. I don't always play guitar, but this I'm just coming off of a tour through Colorado. It ended me up here, and it's just gonna be easy to bring it, and it's a lot more interactive, you know, to have that experience with people, and just that people even know that you even like wrote the music or that you're, you know, contributing to it in that moment. It just brings the energy up a little.
Totally. Well, it's kind of tempting to go, is that person just like pretending to do things as they play, you know, their laptop, you know?
Right,
and
exactly.
So to see somebody, I was like, okay, yeah, her fingers are moving. Okay, she's playing. This is legit.
Yeah, it's a more intimate experience with the crowd.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were very conscious not to be I can't remember how you phrased it, but like you didn't want to be a female EDM or a female band. So, and with the way that you package and the way you do things. And can you explain like why and what does that mean?
Well, I have many reasons behind the name Living Light. And I could go into all of those in a little bit, but one thing that has really stood out to me is that I want to make music that can be, that's not, you know, overly aggressively masculine, that's also not overly feminine, that's just good music, that just kind of transcends gender boundaries and, you know, global boundaries and race boundaries, and that, you know, that can even transcend environmental boundaries. So something that you can listen to like in your home, or that you can do yoga to, and you could also rock out to on a dance floor. And so for me, because of being, so I've been a music producer for 20 years, and
since you were 4.
Yes, since I was 4. And it has been like most of my peers have been prominently male. That's just kind of how it's worked out. And in my younger years, I would say that there was a little bit of an edge at like getting my music heard by like booking agencies and festivals. I think because I was representing myself as a woman, and there can be a tendency to think like, oh, I must sing and play piano, and you know,
right.
I can sort of understand where that kind of cliches come from. But I really, you know, with this project, I just wanted to remove all gender stuff from the equation, you know, and just have people just listen to my music. So for the first year, I just all I had was just like my logo up on my Living Light page, because I just, you know, I didn't want to be like, I'm a female musician, you know.
Right.
And I just want to always just be about the music.
Awesome. So can I ask you about the logo? So who designed it?
I designed it.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it.
Thanks.
Oh, awesome.
It has a lot of different meanings in it, and similar to the name Living Light, it's been like the meanings have been revealing themselves to me as I kind of go forward. Some of it is based off of an experience I had that, it's gonna sound cheesy, but it's on December 21st, 2012, is when I came up with the name for Living Light. I was hanging out in a ceremony with a friend of mine that was leading it, and she's actually what's called a biophoton therapist, which is a modality that sounds super new agey, but it's really awesome and it works, and I've done it, where you hold on to these like metal rods that kind of send photons through your meridians. And long story short, I was still kind of learning about what she does, and I asked her, I was like, well, what does living light mean? Or what is biophoton therapy? And she's like, it literally translates to the living light. And I was like, oh, that'd be a great band name. And at that moment, I remembered seeing this Mayan Elder Speaks video saying that, like, on December 21st, you'll have one idea. And that idea, it's going to pave the way for your future, but you must write it down right away or you're going to forget. And I was like, oh my God, that's the idea. I need to start a band called Living Light. Because I'd already been tinkering with going back to my own production. So right around this time, I was also having this vision, like right before I asked my friend about her work, I was having this vision of sort of cosmic alignment that was happening. You know, everyone was kind of talking about it around that time, of basically like multiple eclipses happening in a row, and the Earth on top of this giant wave, and the light from the sun coming into everything in existence and creating everything in existence. And I just, you know, I think this is maybe something that's happening in the conversation why I was having this vision. But the vision just showed me how like everything starts as light and then turns to matter. And which led me to asking about the light. So I don't know if you can really see, you can't really see the logo too well. I could hold it up here, but it's basically supposed to kind of like symbolize that eclipse that I saw. And I just started drawing it. And then I realized that like I had kind of drawn in the seven chakras in there, and that I had drawn in the moon cycles around the outside. And I was like, oh, you know, it also looks like a plant growing mm-hmm. up. And it also kind of looks like a dragonfly. And so there's this I want to have this energy of like light shining down, coming through and bringing life, and then it growing up and cycling around. So, but in the most like minimal way possible. So that's how the logo kind of came to be.
Badass. Is there anybody that has it as a tattoo that you know of?
Not yet. Someone has a tattoo of a design I did though for the Firefly Regional Burning Man.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I did this a very similar looking logo, but it's actually like a firefly, and they got a tattoo
cool.
on it.
So you could be first. Get that tattoo. So we shifting around. So when we were communicating before you came into town, you had let's say a rocky path on the last few weeks of everything falling apart, and you had some illness, and you lost your luggage.
I've been on a crazy tour. Yeah.
But it seemed to me that your mood just stayed, dude, we're good. It's good. It's good. And then you, how did you, I mean, there's, you know that at the end, there's somebody on the other side of this plane trip where you're already not feeling well and they lose your stuff and you know there's people going to be waiting to hear you play, and how do you not go and shut down?
Well, yoga helps with it a lot, that's for sure. So, you know, I'm also a yoga instructor. I practice yoga every day. And so it's my teacher, Kobe Kozlowski, talks about riding the vinyasa wave. And so, like, no matter, you know, what's happening in life, you can always kind of transmute it into the next thing, and everything kind of becomes sensation.
And one thing that, so last night at Trilogy, you led a yoga class at 7.
I did. And it was packed. And there's like 50 people there. It's awesome.
And then play music at 11, which I think is so cool.
10 to 12, yeah.
10 to 12. Yeah. Sorry, 10 to 12. Two hours. I only lasted a few minutes. But it was, but what a cool thing to, which is why, you know, I put you in that special person category, is like you bring all of these energies of healing into your presence and what you share. Right. Okay. So you use yoga and that helps you keep.
Yoga definitely helps. You know, to reiterate on like what John's talking about, when I left my house 2 weeks ago, I thought I was only going to be gone for like 5 days. And then my tour got extended and I got more shows. I'm just coming off of a 10 day tour in Colorado where we played pretty much like every town and it was awesome. And when I say we, I was playing with like Earthcry and Desert Dwellers and Kuali and all these really super awesome people. Then I was supposed to fly home and my flight got canceled. And so, you know, I stayed longer. I started out the cold with my first, I started out the tour with my first cold in like 3 years. And then I got like my first stomach flu in like 10 years. And this is just a couple of days ago. And here I am like bedridden in my agent's assistant's like spare room. And I'm trying to piece together like this workshop I'm doing out here in San Diego and like putting together this like 2 hour set while I'm like sweating like Mozart. Have you ever seen the movie Amadeus where he's like, in the 80s, I just have to finish this one piece. He's like all pale. And that was me, like literally. And it's just, and along with this, I've been having like lots of, you know, like big life changes at home. And what I found is that when all these things, and I forgot to mention that like on the flight here to San Diego, my luggage got lost and I almost wasn't even able to play the show.
You arrive at 2, you're supposed to play that night and your luggage was lost.
Yeah. Yep. And then it showed up and I even had a chance for a 5-minute nap after like not sleeping for 2 days and then playing.
But so, I mean, it's so easy to fall in the mentality of like, the world's against me. Yeah. Everything's like, I'm cursed. Everything's going wrong. What? This isn't fair.
Right.
But that's not what I got from you.
No. Well, that's because, something we talked about before. I have this theory called a sphere pop. And it's really, it's been something that, it's a theory I came up with about, 20 years ago at this point, I guess. And it's really stuck with me throughout life. And it's really helped me during the times when it seems like everything's falling apart. Like, you lose your job, you crash your car, you get dumped, you lose your apartment, et cetera, et cetera. Like, all these, but the times when, like, everything seems like it's falling apart. You worked so hard to build up all these things, and now it's not fair. You know, they're being removed. They're crumbling down. Basically, like, the theory that I found that has helped me through those times is that over and over again, we are reborn into greater and greater spheres of awareness, spheres of perception, spheres of consciousness. And what I mean by that is that, for example, if you take when you're in the womb, all you know is the boundaries of the womb. So at that point, like your entire reality is based off of being in the womb. That's all you know. But eventually you grow too big to fit in the womb. And so as you grow too big, discomfort starts. And as discomfort starts, it starts to become painful, but it becomes painful to stay, and then it also becomes painful to leave. But eventually you have to, because that's the process of growth and consciousness evolution. And so from the moment that you're too big to fit, then you go through the birth process, and that transition, I imagine, is pretty painful and shocking for most people. And then you're birthed out into, you know, a much larger reality. Well, we tend to think that that is like a straight trajectory, that from there on we just grow. But I think that what happens is that since that's an early experience, that we tend to recreate the walls of the womb over and over again throughout life. And what I mean by those walls is that we're always interacting with what we perceive reality to be at any given time. And so, and we base our decisions off that. So for instance, where we work, where we live, who our partner is, how we interact with our families, and so on and so forth, you know, the cars we have, et cetera. But our consciousness keeps growing and it keeps expanding until eventually like the worlds that we set up start to feel constrictive again. And then we reach that point where, you know, if we don't pay attention to the signs that things are becoming restrictive of basically our soul's expansion, then they start to fall apart for us. It seems mystical, maybe it is, but I think that there's, you know, a lot more of like subconscious reasons behind it, you know, of us like attracting things into our life unconsciously or subconsciously that are where we need to go next. But with bringing those in, you know, the constructs of our current sphere of reality have to start to fall away. And it's that breaking apart that's the times when it's like, oh my God, I just got fired from my job and I'm sick and they lost my luggage and I just like got broken up with or, you know, losing my health. Well, all these things, like when everything's falling apart. And but it seems to happen over and over again. And every time you get popped out into this bigger sphere of reality, like over and over throughout my life, it's never like, it's never gone backwards because you can't really go backwards. And so I think it'd be wrong to say it's always better. But in general, it, at least for me, I feel fortunate that it has been. But I think the only painful parts are when there's like a holding on to the past. Like it'd be very painful to be a baby that's like, that's too big to fit in the womb, that's like still holding on. They're trying to like pull the legs out. You know, that's the painful part. Like if you just go through and you're born, then I have all this space, you know.
So like when the luggage gets lost, that's like your water breaking. You just gotta go,
push. That's final piece. On, push, final push. Piece. Yeah. So anyways, this is what's kept me. It's like I can kind of start to feel, I'm at a point now after kind of practicing this internal philosophy where I can kind of start to feel when things get restrictive. I'm like, ooh, what's going to happen? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm ready for the pain, but it's like, it gives me a perspective on the pain and a perspective on like, on the changes that are happening. So that I know that it's all a part of the process of life and expansion.
I love that. And it's kind of like, that's like the graduate level version of a kind of, I think a core spiritual principle is that, you know, you never quite know what's best for you. And so when you attach to what you think things are supposed to be and then they don't go well, it's very easy to be like, no, don't leave me. I can't live without you. And then 5 years later, you're like, thank God they're not with me. I'm not with them anymore. Or whether it's a job or a person, and you just over life, you start to learn, oh, there's losing things or having my plans fall apart is popping, it's expansion, it's growing, it's what it's
always
growth. It's good. It's yeah. And if I would have stayed in the womb, that would have been pretty traumatic for my mom eventually. You know,
right.
I was 15 years old and still in there. I mean, that would be rough.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. So our conversations often come back to Burning Man, and so I've been going for 20 years, and you've been going for how long? When was your first year?
2006. It's not that long ago, okay. Actually. It's only been, well, I guess it's 12 years ago.
That's pretty good. Yeah. And so
lightly seasoned.
And you mentioned that, as with many people, that played a significant shift in your perspective. Can you share what happened?
Oh, at my first burn?
Yeah, when you first saw, oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was a sphere pop I was going through, definitely. It was, you know, I had been a musician already for quite some time, but it had been difficult for me to really step on the path seriously. Well, I was trying to, but I was very easily defeated. And in a lot of ways, I didn't realize what I was making music for. Almost making it, I didn't realize how important it was for me and my soul to have this expression, to have this art. And so I'd get caught up in like what, you know, how other people perceived it or like wanting to be a rock star or wanting it to, you know, be a profession. And with that came a lot of frustrations and me even giving up music for a few years. Be like, no, I just need to do a corporate job. And, you know, I worked for newspapers for a while. And I became very depressed during it. And I was also, I was living in Boston and, you know, folks have a little bit of an edge there. And, there can be a sort of shooting down of ideas, at least within like some of the subcultures I was in. And I felt like I was constantly kind of having these imaginative ideas and people being like, ah, oh, that'll never work, you know. So I even had that in myself, like always just kind of telling myself like why stuff would never work. So it was really when I went to Burning Man in 2006 that the most, you know, amazing, humbling part of it was like you go there, you look around, and you just realize that it's like, wow, that's the person that made this gigantic rubber ducky. And just one day, they're like, I think I'm just going to make a gigantic rubber ducky and, like, you know, just hire a crew and just do it. You know, it's like, I wonder how much, like, second guessing of this thing they really had, you know, it's like, and it was so liberating to me to see these people that were just, like, suddenly actualizing their daydreams. Yeah, I heard someone say actually at that burn, they're like, yeah, it's like the greatest externalization of the inner landscape. Mm. And that always stuck with me. I'm like, yeah, it's really true.
I mean, I think one of the most significant things about Burning Man is something that is not exclusive to Burning Man, but it is that culture of support, that culture, like you mentioned, the voices that go, you know, that the default world, that is one of the loudest sounds that you will hear if you tune into it. So many people are telling you, no, don't wear that, don't do that, that's stupid, get in line, be a consumer, do the things you're doing. You know. And at Burning Man, it's like, what did you just say? Did that come from, was that from your heart speaking? Well then, turn it up, here's a microphone. You know, like, oh, can I sing backup for whatever it is that you're doing? You know, it's like, whoa. And it's so different than what most people are raised with, that that it changes who we are because we allow parts of ourselves to go beyond that voice that's so powerful.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm so incredibly grateful for meeting my Boston Burning Man crew. Hi, guys, if you're watching, back in 2006, because they just showed me like that unbridled imagination combined with really hardworking, like Boston Burners are grizzly, they're hardworking. As I imagine, burners kind of are everywhere, really, but it was really awesome to see like the organization they had and the drive they had, almost to an excessive degree, and the imagination they had, and especially like, you know, there's a lot of like Boston, like scientific, you know, burners, like folks from MIT out there too. So when you combine like science and imagination and drive and this burliness, it was so inspiring to me that I still give like so much thanks for that experience.
That's awesome. You shared a story recently online from a festival. I can't remember which festival it was, but it involved, I think, someone who had a speaker in the back of their bicycle.
That was Burning Man.
Can you tell that story?
Oh yeah. Well, I think that was my very first Burning Man. So 12 years ago, I remember laying in my tent, and you know, you just hear all the different sounds going by and the music going by, and I had just basically been in that spell of like 2 or 3 years where I hadn't been doing my music. And I just remember, like, I was already struck by the creativity and imagination that was present there. And as I laid in my tent, I think I was sick at the time. I was just having this daydream. I'm like, you know, how amazing would it be, you know, to have my music play? I was like, someday I'm going to be laying in a tent and I'm going to hear my music go by at Burning Man. I was like, I'm going to make that happen. I was just like visualizing it and feeling it, and just felt so true. I was like, wow, this is really gonna happen. And it was this past year at Burning Man, I was actually in my tent, like hanging out, getting dressed or something. I think I was already dressed, luckily. I just finished. And sure enough, like I hear my music go by, someone's playing my music. And so like I jump out and I'm like running and chasing this guy, and I grabbed my phone. Luckily I had my phone on me. And it was a fellow on a bike that just has huge boombox. It was blasting my music. Some other people like kind of dancing behind him, and like it wasn't anyone I knew at all. And so like I got footage of him for a little while, like, you know, following him. But It was just, you know, I've had so many of those moments recently, or throughout, you know, the last 10 years where it's like I'll really visualize something to the point of feeling like it's happening in that moment. You know, not so much like imagining it, but like feeling it, like right in your heart and in your gut. So it's like, how would I feel in this moment? What's that feeling that would happen? I'll feel it in my body and I'll hold on to that feeling and then it happens, you know.
I mean, that video is so freaking cool. I mean, it's like one of those real magic moments. And, you know, as you're like, you know, the cameras, you're like, you know, trying to follow and catch up to the person on their bike. And then the story, it's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Someone was mentioning, you said you were talking to, like, when someone is a beginning or getting their start and they want to be a music producer, and you were explaining your overnight success.
My overnight success?
Your lifetime of work to get to this place.
All right.
Do you have, but also you, and you touched on this already about how that at times when you lose track of why you're making music, is that, I'm putting words in your mouth, is that part of the message to all musicians and that don't lose track of that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, for sure. You know, for me, I just came to a point where I realized that, like, I have to make music, that it wasn't really, it's not a choice, it's not a career. I mean, it is for me right now, but it's what my soul just needs to do. Like, it's just, I would say second, like, the only thing that comes close to this has been, like, doing a yoga practice every day. But as far as, like, me being sane and me being, like, emotionally grounded and feeling like I'm just right in the world, it's from making music. Like, this just has to come out. You know?
Make music first because it's who you are.
Yes.
And it's what you have to do. And then by luck and spirit and intention and hard work, it's a career.
Yes.
But it's not the, doesn't
it's go
in the reverse.
Other way around.
Yeah. I just was listening to this Alan Watts lecture, and he was talking about how our culture messes with people so much because we are in the business of making money. And so if you are a shoemaker, you get down and you make shoes,
mm-hmm.
and you get passionate about making shoes. And then because you have to make things work, you sell the shoes because you need resources and you sell the shoes. But that's way different than going, how can I make money? Oh, there's a need for shoes. Because you make shoes with the idea of making money,
mm-hmm.
and then you skimp on the quality, and then you go, well, how can we reduce the cost of this and so we can make money? And then when the objective is money, the product's not there and the spirit's not there. And I see that it's one of the real dangers, I think, when people start to find a passion for an art and quickly want to be like, I want to do this full time. I want this to be my job. And like, ooh, that can be really dangerous, because then that you're going to start to think, how do I make money doing that? And then it affects
what
you do.
Well, actually, I even had an experience of that recently where, you know, it took me about like 17 or 18 years before I finally got a booking agent. It was a long journey. And I just got so excited about it, and I just recently moved to North Carolina. I was like, oh, I'm all set now. Name and lights. I'm just gonna be touring. This is great. And what I didn't take into consideration was, like, it had a toll on me in a few different ways. So one, it's like suddenly my ability to be alive, to survive, you know, to eat, to have shelter was based off my music and the acceptance of it. So every time I'd play a show and there'd be like two dudes standing there with the beers, kind of looking bored, kind of like cows chewing grass, you know, that kind of like face. I'm like, oh no, I'm not gonna, I can't survive. Like, this is my, I'm not gonna eat. And so I was like, well, maybe I need to change the music and make it more, you know. So I started twisting and cutting off.
What are the kids like nowadays?
Yeah, I know. I started cutting off the creative channel. And two, I just have a passion for being in service to people, which is why I also work as a yoga instructor and a nutritional therapist. And I just wasn't, I wasn't feeling that direct connection of like, it's awesome to inspire a dance floor, but I had kind of stepped away from my work as a yoga instructor, where I'm more, easily working one-on-one with people. And so that part of me felt unnurtured as well. And so it was this very like constrictive kind of feeling of a lot of self-worth issues, like based around my own survival, that were based around the acceptance of what was supposed to be like my soul's expression, my creative calling, my way to tap into source, you know, had become this product. And so it really lasted like a year, and then I, you know, went back to like having side work, having teaching yoga, doing nutrition, stuff like that. And I just feel so much better. Like, it's just, yeah.
I mean, there are people that become successful and popular by trying to be successful and popular, but I would say that's not a career path that you want for yourself, because then you're chasing something that you have no control over, really. Whereas if your goal is to honor your muse, or honor your spirit, or be in integrity with your gifts, then you can be victorious and you can be triumphant because you are in alignment. And then if there's two people to show, doesn't matter. I mean, it does. It's a bummer, but it's not the same thing as being like, gosh, I'm trying to do what these people want, and I still. Then it's like you failed to try to play the role that they want.
Yeah.
But you can't fail if you're just being yourself.
It's true. It's true. I definitely reached a point where it's like I realized I would make the music even if no one else was listening. Now, granted, that's a kind of lonely experience. So, like, even just knowing there's like one person that presses play on my music is like, oh my god, I'm so grateful. Just one person listened to my music, you know. And
it's really... one of my shifts in my whole life was I had a chapter in my life when I was success oriented and I wanted to be famous and I wanted to have a big audience and I still would like it, but from a place of service. Like if it resonates with people, then I would like to be doing more of that. But I'm not going to make it happen but there was a time when I was like, what, tell me what I need to do. In fact, like I did a TV pilot and these producers are like, okay, we're going to go to this club. And we're going to have a fake entourage coming with you. And I'm like, really? That's okay. If you tell me to do it. And it was like, I felt so icky and wrong, but it was like, I'll do whatever I have to do to be successful. And it didn't succeed. And a great lesson, because I'm like, oh, success doesn't, you're probably not going to succeed in those terms anyways, so might as well do it on your own terms.
Right.
Don't compromise who you are, because but there was, when I was trying to be really successful, I had a moment where I had worked on for years, someone kind of copied it, and then it blew up, and it got tons of success, but somebody else doing it, and people were calling me like, oh, I heard you, they're talking about you on the radio. I'm like, no, that was the people that copied me. Yeah. And it hurt so much. And this person was like, that I was hanging out with, they're like, dude, they're watching me just stew. And they're like, you're so caught up in trying to get a bigger audience that you're not appreciating or noticing the people who are right next to you that totally get it. You know? And I was like, and all of a sudden I had this like visual that for you it's literal, but for me it was this metaphor of me playing on a stage in a small club and having the dance floor filled with, you know, like 10 people just grooving to my music, you know? And while they're grooving and having the time of their lives to my music, I'm just going, oh, I wish I was playing in an arena.
You know? Yeah.
And like,
that's a good analogy.
And it's like, oh, wait a minute. That's the unwinnable situation. You're always going to want bigger. You're always going to want better. But as you said, if there's one person hitting play, if there's one person dancing to your music, you win.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, it's awesome.
when you can slip back into that, then you can kind of release that demon voice that's always poking you to go into the default world, bigger, more, greater.
Yeah.
And tune back into the muse and be like, I got you. We're going to do this. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely taken me a while to get to that point of gratitude. You know, it wasn't something that happened overnight, especially like, you know, certainly when I was younger, I had all these expectations. Like I watched Jim and the Holograms when I was a little kid, which is probably why I play guitar now. But you know, I had these like expectations of like, you know, soaring stages with lasers and like thousands of crowds. But although, you know, actually I do get lasers now and I have a guitar and I've played to 1,000 people a few times. So, you know,
power of visualization.
But it, you know, it definitely, like, it took me a long time to be happy with anything less. Mm. And especially when I would, like, like when it comes to like seeing play counts and things like that for music. But, you know, I'm like, oh, there should be more. And then I reached a point where I was like, wait a minute, I have like, you know, every week there's like 700, 800 people, like, or never, not every week, excuse me, every 24 hours is like, wait, 700 or 800 people are listening to my music. There's 700 to 800 people press play, you know, on my music, you know, in a 24-hour period. Like, that's great. And it's like just as, and you know, just as great as if like just one person did. It's like this, that, what I know what it takes for me to actually hit play on something is like a monumental effort to like, it's like, I got so many other things I'm doing, you know, right. I have like three careers I'm juggling, they probably have families and places to go and Facebook. For someone to actually go, just one person is just, this is so awesome.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's, I was noticing my like hypocrisy as, cause I like to talk the big talk about, yeah, like, I don't really, you know, I just try to do my thing and not worry about it anymore. But as I'm like, oh, but if I put up a video and it doesn't get any views or what, not any from my standards, yeah. You know, like not what my average is or something, or I find myself in like,
right.
Well, what's the point?
Yeah. What's the point? Definitely. Yeah.
And I, you know, I was having this conversation recently where I was feeling very discouraged and as Facebook is popping up old videos of mine that sometimes I think that I've spent a lot of time on these highly edited and highly, you know, text and things. And I was like, should I even keep making these videos? You know, like maybe I should just like keep like, see last year, like link, like just put links to the past, repost. And the person I was with is like, well, no, you have to keep doing it. I'm like, why? They're like, because it's who you are. And it's like, right. This is right. I would be out of integrity if I didn't. And that's that same problem of like, of I was slipping into the purpose of it is because of how it's received. No, that's the purpose of it is because that is how I'm in integrity.
I guess the question is, you know, is it something that, like, that's who you are, and do you feel called, still feel called to do it? Right, do you enjoy doing it?
Right.
Is it how you want to express yourself?
Right.
You know, we can. You can change who we are too. So true. Don't feel like locked in to having to make videos. Because
I actually,
don't want to.
My new calling is actually professional racquetball player.
Really?
I haven't played in 25 years, but I really think that I'm, I don't know, a professional athlete of any sort is, I think, my new career path.
I had no idea. That's great.
I appreciate you humoring me.
I'm in full support. No, it's never too late.
Oh, we just stretch a little bit here. Okay, well, so I don't want to go down the route of a nutritional stuff, but I will say that the teeny tiny things that you've told me just today, I feel like I've learned a ton. So if you're looking for a dietary adjustment or tips or trying to feel better, actually, there's something you said about that I said, I've always been able to eat whatever I want. And you said, well, I used to think that until I realized that, no, what I was eating was affecting me in negative ways.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh. So that's a whole nother podcast. But can you list off some ways that people can find you online to find more about music and nutritional stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my project's called Living Light, my music project that is. And you can find my music on like all over. You just type in Living Light. You'll probably find a lot of new age sites and you'll find my music. So. but yeah, I'm on iTunes and Beatport and SoundCloud /Living Light. My website's livinglightmusic.info. And I'm on Facebook at /Living Light Frequencies. And my nutrition business is actually called Living Bright Wellness. So it's a little easier. It's easy to remember. And I actually have like a nutrition group that I'm going to be kind of getting back into soon called Living Brighter, and that's on Facebook. And so if you just find my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Eartha Harris, you can find connections to all my Living Light and Living Brighter stuff there.
Fantastic. Is, anything that I forgot to ask you about?
Well, tons, so we'll just have to do another one.
Okay, we'll do another one. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And please, dig deeper. There is a soundtrack. If you're not familiar with this music, you are in for a treat. You're welcome. Thank you for being here. We love you. I love you.
Oh, I love you too, John.